If you were able to walk into a room confident that you would be well-received, seen, heard, and appreciated by others, and all it took was a few changes in how you navigate your everyday relationships, would you be willing to make those changes? It is possible to be both fully authentic and to experience the best relationships of your life. Now, here is the host of Navigating Complicated Relationships with behavior expert, Mikayla Gaffin-Stone.
Welcome, everyone, to Navigating Complicated Relationships. I'm your host, Mikayla Gaffin-Stone. I am a board-certified behavior analyst. I'm a nutrition coach. I have a whole lot of things that I have learned and studied because I love to learn and I love to just study everything in as much depth as possible. So that's why I bring you a range of topics when we do this podcast. And actually, in conversation, if you talk with me, you'll find I can go across a range of things depending on where our conversation takes us. And that's kind of how I like to be. Now, is that different from other people? Well, some tell me it is. Some tell me it's kind of unusual to study as much as I do. Is it a problem? I would say not, because it means that I get a depth and a breadth of understanding of a wide range of subjects that I really appreciate. But for somebody who's not used to that, they might find that a little, I don't know, neuro-spicy, a little different, right? Today's podcast is, funnily enough, called On Being Neuro-Spicy. And my aim with this episode is to be thought-provoking. I'm going to dive into the world of neurodiversity and explore the concept of what it feels like and what it is to be neurospicy. I'm going to uncover some strengths, abilities, and of course, challenges that are associated with being neurodivergent. So there's creativity and innovation on one side, and the social stigma and sensory sensitivities that cause their own problems on the other end, right? Now, we all benefit from navigating this landscape with people who have neurodiversity and also with ourselves. You know, empathy and understanding is something that we all need. So when you can bring that to a person with neurodiversity, it helps them to feel seen and heard and valued as a legit contributing member of society. We as a society tend to other people that aren't the same as us. And this is a huge problem. It seems to be becoming more of a deal in this world today, where if you don't fit my criteria for how a person ought to be and what they ought to believe and where they ought to stand on certain issues, then you're wrong. You know, we do a lot of that these days. And just imagine when you have neurodivergency and you're caught up in that, you don't have an option to be other than you are, right? It's not a choice. It's not an opinion. It's just how you are. So whether you're neurodivergent yourself, or you're thinking of a friend, a family member, maybe you're an educator, or you consider yourself an ally, this episode is for you, because there's going to be some perspectives and guidance on how to build your own understanding and acceptance of people with neurodiversity. And a big feature here is, I would like to say right off the bat, it is specifically not about fitting in. Fitting in is for chameleons and wallpaper. It is not about fitting in. It is about being accepted with all that you are, the way that you are, with all the things that come with it, right? The whole package. Accepted as who you are, belonging to the society, belonging to your group. That's what this is about. People with neurodiversity are not chameleons and they are not wallpaper. So whenever you think of a child in a school, for example, what's the first thing we try and do with a kid in school? Make them fit in, right? Hey, don't do that behavior. The other kids don't do it. Don't say these things, the other kids don't say them. You know, behave this way so that you fit in with the crowd. Now, seriously, think about that for a minute. How many of us spend so much time and effort trying to stand out? Like if you're a coach, for example, you want to stand out from the other coaches. If you are making your way as an actor, you want to stand out from the other actors. Like whatever area of life you're in, you want to have your own spot where you stand out. So why then do we spend so much time and effort trying to force neurodivergent kids into the same shape as normative developing kids? Or we could even say undiagnosed kids, because sometimes the kids that pass for normative developing, maybe not, you know, they might get a diagnosis as adults. And then what have you done? You've taken another child and made them try to fit the same criteria as this particular person who hasn't been diagnosed yet. Like, it's messed up when you try and take one kid and shape them into being like the other kids. I have a huge issue with that, and frankly, you should too, because what happens when you do that to a child is you are squashing their natural abilities, you're making them feel wrong, and they will carry that into adulthood. They will always have this sense of second guessing themselves, being unsure of their place in society, of repeating themselves, not because it's a pattern of speech, but more because they don't know that you're going to understand or even listen to them, because that's what they grew up with. Now, think about that. How unkind is it to start off with, but how damaging is it to that human being? And we do this to them simply because these kids don't fit in. They're not chameleons. Well, we need to change the school system and we need to change society so that doesn't keep happening. This business of having a social stigma because you think differently is freaking insane, frankly. We need to really stop doing that. That is so 19th century. And it just doesn't need to happen now. We need neurodiversity in our society, because if everybody does fit in the same box, if everybody's thinking the same way, what are we going to get? Where are the innovations coming from? Where are the changes in society that we need? Where is the progress? You know, Steve Jobs, he's somebody who had some neurodiversity going on, and I'll get into a few people later that have made a big difference in the world with their neurodiversity. This difference in the way the brain perceives what we all think of as normal, the different perspectives are actually what we need in this world so that we can do things in a new way, so that we can improve. If you all think the same way all the time, we're going to be so stuck that things won't improve from here. They'd go downhill. I mean, we need this change of thinking. We need these different perspectives to see a new way out of problems. You know, if you think the same way and don't change that pattern, then the thinking that got you into the problem is going to keep you there. Doesn't that make sense? Right? You need a different perspective. So neurodiversity is such a broad title. I mean, it's huge. Do you have ADHD? Do you have autism? And can I just say also that having a touch of autism is like being slightly pregnant. You either are or you aren't. It's not that we all have a bit of autism. That minimizes and kind of takes away the legitimacy of somebody with autism. Autism is a different wiring of the brain where you perceive things differently. Just as a matter of routine, you can't see what you can't see. It's the same for neurotypical people too. So for example, if you're talking with someone who has what used to be diagnosed as Asperger's, and now I think they give a number on a scale with autism, this is all insurance stuff and doesn't really make sense. But if you're talking to somebody with Asperger's, they may be pretty blunt in their conversation. And it's not to be rude. It's not because they're ignorant. It's because they don't get the concept of this sort of gray area of nuance that we often use in our conversation. We won't say specifically what we mean. We'll kind of hint at it or suggest a thing that's close to it. And the other person is supposed to read the real language behind the words. Someone with Asperger's isn't going to do that. They're going to take you at face value. So they're going to tell you the truth at face value. And sometimes that can be a little bit of a shock because you're not used to hearing the truth. Is it a problem, though? Is it wrong? Is it something we have to stop people from doing? I'm going to say it's a refreshing change. I kind of like it. You know, if you can't take a true opinion, then you might want to rethink where you are in that whole dynamic of expressing your opinion and receiving opinions. If you can't handle somebody else's opinion about yourself, then maybe you have some insecurities that need dealing with. Because if you're secure in who you are, that's really not going to affect you, right? It can just be interesting to see this other person's perspective of you. Nobody sees you the way you do, right? We have our own concept of ourselves, and then other people see different things. It's like picking up a diamond and turning it around. It's not the same from different angles. We human beings are like that. Now, with people with neurodiversity, it could be autism, it could be ADHD, as I mentioned, it could be something like dyslexia, which means that words are not your friend when they're written down. Is it a problem? I'm going to say not once you leave school. School makes it a problem, but if you have something like dyslexia, what happens is you become really creative. You find other ways to get the thing done. You find other ways to learn. You find other ways to communicate. And I think that's fantastic because coming from that, you get things like iPhones and, you know, you get things like the internet and so on because we need different ways to approach an age-old problem, right? Or an age-old situation. So dyslexia, Richard Branson has dyslexia. Do you think it held him back? Is he suffering from a lack of something? No. But do you think maybe when he was at school, he got made fun of and was given a hard time because he couldn't read and or couldn't read well and had problems writing the essays that were demanded of him? You know, when he went to school, there wasn't the voice to text computer setup and so on. So this guy will have suffered through school, hated school. By the time he gets out, he's determined to find a whole new way of doing things that doesn't involve focusing on his issue with dyslexia, right? So, how many times do we judge a person and try and hold them down because we don't understand where they're coming from and we're not looking for the strengths they have? Richard Branson has some serious strengths. Love him or hate him, I don't really care. The point is, this is a man who doesn't understand the word no when he wants to try something new. What he understands is, let's try it and see what happens. And I love that curiosity about him and the fact that he's undaunted no matter what people say. So that resilience, is that because of his neurodiversity? Probably. Right? Because you have to develop a pretty thick skin when you've got stuff going on that people don't understand and they batter you for it. So let's think of a different way to approach people with neurodiversity that doesn't involve trying to turn them into wallpaper. It'd be a really good idea, right? I would appreciate that. So we have a break coming up, and I want you to stay with me. I've got lots to tell you and some ideas on how you can shift your perspective so that everybody has a better time. Don't go away. You're listening to Navigating Complicated Relationships right here on the Inspired Choices Network. I'll be back in a minute.
What if your relationships could be a source of delight instead of a source of struggle? In a world where human interactions are anything but straightforward, tuning in to Navigating Complicated Relationships with behavior expert Michaela Gaffin-Stone will offer you insights, tools, and a whole new level of understanding for you to use right now. Listen for Navigating Complicated Relationships with Michaela Gaffin-Stone, Wednesdays at 12 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Central, 10 a.m. Mountain, 9 a.m. Pacific on InspiredChoicesNetwork.com.
Are you a subject matter expert? Are you here to share your expertise with an audience waiting to hear from you in only the way you can deliver? Are you ready to have your voice amplified across the airwaves? Inspired Choices Network has a global radio platform streaming to millions of people across the world. Professionally produced and supported by an accomplished team every step of the way, you can broadcast from anywhere in the world, knowing your voice matters, and we ensure it is delivered with ease and efficiency. Eager to hear your message, the world awaits. Contact us today to become an Inspired Choices Network radio host. Email becomeahost@inspiredchoicesnetwork.com.
This is Navigating Complicated Relationships with Michaela Gaffin-Stone. To participate in the program, join the live studio audience in our chat room at inspiredchoicesnetwork.com. You can also send an email to mickey@gaffinstone.com. Now back to the program.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm delighted that you're still here. And we are talking about on being neurospicy. And neurospicy, I think, is a much nicer title than neurodiversity. I mean, it's correct that there's a lot of diversity, but spicy gives it a little more flavor, right? A little more oomph. And there's a lot of oomph in being neurospicy. You know, I've mentioned before the break the difficulties, or some of the difficulties, of being a kid in school with neurodivergency. Now, an example I can give you is a kiddo that I've been working with recently, and he's been having a lot of one-on-one help, but he's a very smart child, actually. His language isn't up to speed, but his mental abilities, his cognitive abilities are really on fire. Like, he is a smart kid. But the classroom, and I'm not mentioning even which state this is in, but the classroom teacher doesn't want to let him into the classroom until he stops stimming. Now, stimming, for those who don't know, is self-stimulatory behavior. And it typically looks like flapping your hands and maybe bouncing up and down. So I want to explain a little bit why this child does this stimming, because you'll see it with a lot of kids with autism and some adults with autism too, right? Those that haven't had it squashed out of them. So when you get this intensity of feeling and there's all these sensations coming in from the environment and it builds up and it builds up, you have to have an outlet for it. And stimming, this hand flapping or rocking or whatever the child's doing, this movement, is a way of offloading that extra input. So it's actually a coping mechanism. It's not a freaky behavior. It's a coping mechanism. Now, how many people do you know who wave their hands around when they talk, like I do sometimes, or they'll twirl their hair or chew on a pen, or, you know, there's some kind of behavior, play with a fidget spinner, right? Those became all the rage. Why is it okay to play with a fidget spinner, but not to flap your hand? Does it make sense to have a big problem with somebody flapping their hands? My argument with the teacher and with the school is that no, it doesn't make a difference, and he should not be stopped from stimming, because that is harmful. If you have a coping mechanism and it works for you, and then somebody else says, but I don't like the way you do that, you have to stop. How are you going to feel about that? Are you going to feel kind of repressed, maybe unaccepted? Maybe you object to having to try harder than everybody else? I mean, think of that. When we demand things of kids with various diagnoses, we're looking for that child to do more than any other child, to work harder than any other child, because they have to mask, which is a way of pretending you are a person you're not, right? So they pretend to be interested in social events when they're not. They pretend that what you're telling them is interesting when maybe it isn't. You know, they make eye contact, even though I've been told by adults with autism that that can be physically painful. And here's another thing. When you make a child with neurospiciness make eye contact with you, and they're trying not to, what you can be doing then is short-circuiting their processing ability. So they're trying to listen to you and understand what you're saying and formulate a response, right? Which is what you hope the person you're talking to is going to do. I'm hoping you're doing that right now, you know, that you're listening and you're forming an idea about what I'm saying. But because of all the sensory input that they're so sensitive to, eye contact is just one step too many. And it short circuits the ability to make all those connections that you want them to make. So you make the child make eye contact and then get mad at them when they don't respond to the question you just asked. Well, which do you want? It's too much to ask for all of it. And really, when you think about it, a lot of kids that are considered normative, they don't make eye contact either. So, you know, a lot of adults don't. So why do we make it a bigger issue for kids who are neurodiverse? How fair is that? Really and truly, it's something that we do, but why? Let's examine why we do that. Next time you try and squash a child into a certain shape because they're not behaving like the other kids, is it really because that behavior is a problem? Or is it because you don't really understand why they're doing something different? Like, what is the root cause of that? Now, some things we are going to try and shape a behavior into something that resembles what other kids do on occasion. So if you're somebody who, when you get really wound up, you go and hit somebody, okay, we've got to work on that and change it, because that's not something you can do in a social situation, right? That's not going to go well. So we find another outlet for that energy. And funnily enough, stimming can be pretty good, because when you're flapping your hands, you're not thumping somebody, right? So really, it's a question of what do you want that person to do within their range, not yours, right? We typically try and make other people fit into our idea of what somebody should look like. But wow, how would it be if you could let that idea go? If you could just say, you know what, I'm going to show up how I am, and I'm going to see who this person is. What do they bring to the table that's so interesting? What do they have that can be valuable and a contribution? Because there's so many barriers that we put up right now for neurospicy people that, well, you can't do that. I can't make different accommodations for one child. Everybody has to do it the same way. You know, if you've got kids, chances are you have heard something like that in school. Everybody has to do it this way. We can't make accommodations. It's got to look like that. Well, why? Because as soon as you leave school, you spend so much time trying to stand out and be different, as I mentioned earlier. So what do we actually expect from the school system when we're trying to make everybody the same shape? You know, we're trying to make everybody into variations of the same person. They all tick the same boxes. I mean, that was an idea in the Industrial Revolution when schools needed to churn out people to go work in factories. That's why you have the bell ring to change classrooms. It kind of conditions you, which is very behavior analysis, right? It conditions you that when you're working in a factory and the bell rings, it tells you something. You know, this is really Industrial Revolution stuff. You wanted to turn out a bunch of people who could follow orders and not question, show up regularly, work hard, get the things done, go home, right? That's a factory. Funnily enough, that's also the army, right? That's what we want from our soldiers, is you're going to do what we say and you're not going to question it. So when you bring somebody through the school system with that kind of approach, and you're squashing the kids who don't fit that mold, and you're making them fit that, we're crushing their ability to critically think, to question, to innovate, to have creative ideas that can make things new again, that can bring us forward as a society. Because what worked a couple of hundred years ago doesn't work now. What worked 50 years ago doesn't work now. We need to change things. When I talk about parenting, for example, one of the things I'm going to tell every parent that listens to me is don't look behind you at what your parents did when they raised you. Looking over your shoulder to see, well, that worked for me, so I'm going to do that to my kid. Let's put a break on that for a moment and consider. If you're looking backwards, you're going to walk into an object. If you're looking forwards, you're looking towards the future and you're looking towards what's coming, not what's gone, right? So when you're raising your kids, what kind of parent do you want to be? Not what did you hate about your parents' way of raising you, or what did you love about their way of raising you? No, that's not the key. The key is, what do you want to show up like? What do you think your child needs, with or without neurospiciness, but especially with? How can you be their advocate? How are you going to show up and protect that child from all the forces that would squash them into being less than they are? Because that, frankly, is criminal. I don't think it should be allowed that we do that. So, as a behavior analyst, I work independently because I'm very keen on doing what the person wants and needs, and not what some external source says they ought to have or they ought to be like. Because, if you don't have a problem with flapping your hands, then why would we fix that? Fix in air quotes, right? Why would we do that to you? It's a coping mechanism. I'm not going to take that off you. If making eye contact is a problem, I'm not going to make you make eye contact. It's not that important. The important thing is that you learn that you're valuable as you are, and that you can contribute from your perspective, and that you really are accepted and you belong in society. That's what I want for all the kids, the teens, the adults with neurospiciness, is let's just have our place in society. I'll tell you about my particular flavor of neurospiciness. You may have guessed I have some going on. I'll tell you about that after the break and how it doesn't stop me at all, but it certainly informs my advocacy for people with neurospiciness, because having been on the receiving end of stories like, oh, you're being lazy, you don't pay attention, you're staring out the window, daydreaming, you're this, you're that. Judgments piled one on top of the other. And that's a heavy weight to put on a kid. So, can you be the advocate for a child in your environment today? Can you look at a kiddo who's being put upon to behave other than they are? And can you stand up for them? That would be so nice, and it happens so rarely. Are you that person? Do you do it already? I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear what your experience is, either as somebody who advocates for or even has neurospiciness themselves. What's been your experience? What worked for you? What helped? Because the more we can get the message out about what helps, and the more we can talk about what really doesn't have a place, the more people who don't know will know, right? Because you can't blame somebody for ignorance. Ignorance can be fixed. You can learn a thing. But willfulness and just, intentionally othering somebody, that's a bigger issue. That's a problem. So I'll talk about my neurospiciness after the break, just a bit, and then we'll go on to other things. So don't go anywhere. You are listening to Navigating Complicated Relationships, and today we are on being neurospicy. See you in a minute.
What if your relationships could be a source of delight instead of a source of struggle? In a world where human interactions are anything but straightforward, tuning in to Navigating Complicated Relationships with behavior expert Mikayla Gaffin-Stone will offer you insights, tools, and a whole new level of understanding for you to use right now. Listen for Navigating Complicated Relationships with Mikayla Gaffin-Stone, Wednesdays at 12 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Central, 10 a.m. Mountain, 9 a.m. Pacific on InspiredChoicesNetwork.com.
How wonderful would it be to carry your favorite Inspired Choices Network host with you throughout your day? Well, now you can. Inspired Choices Network now has its very own mobile app. Our free app offers live streaming shows, along with thousands of podcasts and TV episodes. Our shows cover a wide variety of topics. Whether you're waking up with us, carrying us through the day, and taking us to bed with you, we're always here for you to enjoy. We're easy to find. Just search for Inspired Choices Network in the Apple App Store or Google Play Store.
This is Navigating Complicated Relationships with Mikayla Gaffin-Stone. To participate in the program, join the live studio audience in our chat room at InspiredChoicesNetwork.com. You can also send an email to Mickey@GaffinStone.com. Now back to the program.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm so glad you're here listening to me, Mikayla Gaffin-Stone, here on the Inspired Choices Network. And today we're talking about being neurospicy. And what does that mean? And what is your role in a society where people are neurospicy? Many people are neurospicy. Some try to hide it. They mask. They pretend that they fit in. And it comes at a great personal cost. And that can lead to a lot of depression and anxiety in people who think differently, who have different perspectives. Now, we have a lot of people on medication because of anxiety and depression. How many of those people are there because they mask, because they pretend to be someone that society will accept? Now, I mentioned before the break that I was going to talk about my own flavor of neurospiciness, and I have something that's called dyscalculia. So the very simplified version of what that is dyslexia, which is, you know, problems reading and writing, it's problems with letters and words and so on. Dyscalculia is numbers, pattern recognition with numbers. So, you know, a phone number, I'm very likely to mix up the numbers. I'll get the right ones, but you might not get them in the right order. And I don't see that. So but it's more than that. It's like patterns and formulas. So when I say I'm not techie, I'm not kidding. You know, it's not something I'm going to go out and learn. I can't do some of that coding and stuff that tech-minded people need to do. That doesn't work for me. But when it comes to other things like diving deep into behaviors and why people do what they do, I can go deeper than most. So whenever you've got somebody that has what we, I guess, could call a deficit or an area that is just not their smoothest operation, there will be something else that they can do so much better, right? That is, it's the way it balances out. So when you have someone that can't do math, you can bet that they're going to be really good at writing, for example. Maybe that's going to be an author. That happens quite a lot, where you get an author, if you talk to them about things math, they're going to laugh at you and say, yeah, no, that's not a thing for me. But when I was at school, I had a lot of expectations placed on me that I was going to be brilliant at math, because I had the fortune, I'm not going to say whether it was good or bad, but I had the fortune to have a mom who was head girl at school, which in Britain, that's a big deal, right? That's like valedictorian for a chunk of time. And she was brilliant at math, brilliant. And then I come along and I actually had the same math teacher as her. And he recognized who I was because he said, I look so much like her. That was a little freaky, I can tell you. So I sat there in grade 9, I think it was, with this teacher looking at me saying, oh, wow, I'm so glad you're in this classroom. Your mom is a genius. I can't wait to see what you do. Oh, Boy, can you imagine how that went? It was hell on earth. It was rough because I cannot do math. Like, I can't do numbers. We have calculators. That's great. You can ask an AI to solve math problems for you. Even better. Like, I am so happy that we have these tools now. But when I was at school, what we had was berate the child until they do something. That was basically the tactic. And unfortunately, a lot of schools are still doing that. But I could not do differently. I could not show up as my mom. I could not be brilliant at math. It's just not my thing. But then I can do behavior better than she ever could. So where are we placing a whole lot of value on something that is, shall we say, more traditionally accepted as a topic, and we're not valuing other things, right? That can be an example where a child is in someone else's shadow, whether it's a parent, a sibling, whoever it is. When that child is in someone's shadow, you are doing them a huge disservice because you're keeping their light small and you're not seeing what can they do, what are they bringing that will help. They can step forward in such a powerful way. Just because it's not what you were looking for doesn't mean it's less valid, right? So I took years to get over that whole math thing because I thought there was something wrong with me. Well, I would argue it's not wrong, it's just different. That's not how I operate. But give me things, behavior, writing, that kind of thing, and I've got you. I can do those things. So how can you help when you come across somebody who is clearly having issues with a particular topic or a particular behavior? Well, the first thing I'm going to say is educate yourself. Start learning about the different type of neurodivergent conditions there are, and don't be put off by the label so much, because autism, for example, is called autism spectrum disorder. I have a problem with that. I don't think it's a disorder. It's a different way of thinking. That is not a disorder. So I'd rather call it autism spectrum difference or diversity or something like that. But right now, that's what it's called. Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Good grief. If there's one thing ADHD isn't, it's a deficit. Because just in case you haven't come across this for yourself and figured out how it works, people with ADHD or ADD, which means they don't have the hyperactivity, they cannot filter out sensory input. So if there's lights, if there's sound, if there's movement, so you've got TV going on in the background and siblings are playing and mom's cooking over there or dad's cooking and mom's, I don't know, playing snooker behind you or whatever it is, all those things are going on. And you can't block any of them out. They all get equal billing in your attention. So it's actually not a deficit, it's an inability to block, right? So when you've got all that stuff going on, can you imagine trying to do your homework in the middle of that? It's a nightmare. You can't do your homework in the middle of that because there's just too much claiming your attention. How do you process? Think of what I said earlier on about making eye contact. It's another drain on your resources when processing requires your attention. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you could give that child who has this misnomer of ADHD, if you can give them the space to do their stuff in a quiet, sort of sensory low area where, the light isn't flickering and they don't have all these random sounds happening, you'll get better results. And so will they. They'll have less stress and they'll have less anxiety going on. So this is something that, pay attention to that. What does your child need? Okay, accept that they're not going to operate the same as your other kids, or they're not going to operate the same as your expectations said they should. All right, cool. Let's just all say, all right, we're here and we've got this. Now, what are you going to do to accommodate what that child needs to succeed? And in the workplace, how are you going to accommodate what that adult needs to succeed. Sometimes we need a quiet space. You know, my office is nice and quiet and I can do really well in here. But if I had a lot of input going on, a lot of noise and people coming in and going out, I wouldn't get a blessed thing done all day because it's too much. It's distracting. And my attention is going to go here and here and here and here. And how, you know, why do you expect that person to be able to handle all of that and produce, right? There's no reason why they must. There's no reason why that should be a thing. So if you have somebody with dyslexia, how can you accommodate their needs? Voice to text is great for them to write. Text to voice is great for them to read. We all have audible books. Why is it a problem to do that for somebody with dyslexia? Why must they be able to write by hand or type in a computer? We have spell check. You know, all they need to be able to do is access the technology that will get that information to them. That's what we need to make kids proficient in. How do you navigate what you've got going on? And when it comes to somebody like me with dyscalculia, okay, numbers are not my friend. But we have, like I said, AI, we have calculators. I have other people around me that can do math. Like my husband is brilliant at math, so that's great. If I have a math thing, I'm going to go and give it to him. I'm not even going to try because I'll end up with something that's not accurate and then it's frustrating and then it feels like I'm less than, right? And that's what kids with neurodiversity go through every day is I'm not good enough. I don't fit in. I'm not like the other kids. And the adults play a huge role in having kids feel that way. Now, that is a crying shame. That really is something we have to change. It's not fair. It's not sensible. It's not ethical. Like I could go on all day about all the things it isn't. What it is damaging. And I don't think most people wake up in the morning and say, hey, who can I damage today? Like, I don't think so. I'm going to hope that that's not who I'm talking to right now. And if it is, you might want some therapy because that's not the way humans operate. We are social animals and we need to belong. And that might look different for somebody. And sometimes your child might not want to interact with the other kids, but they're observing and they're learning. Why is that a problem? It just looks different, right? So let's challenge the stereotypes and the stigma of people with neurodiversity. When do you use language that's kind of denigrating, that makes that person feel bad? When do you do that? Do you talk in front of the kid? You know, do you say, well, my child has autism, you know, much like you're parading an animal or something. Do you lead with the label? Because a lot of people do. Once you get the label, it becomes this, oh, hey, I'm so-and-so, and this is my child. He has autism. Like, what an awful way to introduce your child. But so many people do it. I've heard it a ton of times. And it's like, yes, but who is your child? You know, I don't care that much about the diagnosis. What I care about is there something I can do to help you have a better day? Is there a behavior that's happening that causes problems? If so, for whom? And is it really a problem? So like I mentioned earlier, if there's violent behavior, for example, sure, yes, we need to work on that. There's no question. But big behaviors are communicating a big problem. So what we need to do is not punish the child, not squash the child, but find out what is the problem? What is causing them so much upset that that's how they behave? Where is it coming from? That's what we need to look at. So when you next see a child that's acting out, ask yourself, where did that come from? What's happening? This child seems to be fighting for survival somehow. Why? What's their perspective? These are questions that if you can just slow down long enough to ask them, you might see something interesting in the environment. But kids don't behave in an obnoxious way in order to cause problems for the hell of it. No, they're expressing something with a behavior that they can't tell you with words. So think about that while we're at the break And maybe think about some examples of where you've seen this in action, or you've even been a part of it. What could that look like if it was approached differently? Think about that while we're on the break. I'm Mikayla Gaffin-Stone, and we are talking about being neurospicy. See you in a minute.
What if your relationships could be a source of delight instead of a source of struggle? In a world where human interactions are anything but straightforward, tuning in to Navigating Complicated Relationships with behavior expert Mikayla Gaffin-Stone will offer you insights, tools, and a whole new level of understanding for you to use right now. Listen for Navigating Complicated Relationships with Mikayla Gaffin-Stone, Wednesdays at 12 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Central, 10 a.m. Mountain, 9 a.m. Pacific on InspiredChoicesNetwork.com. This is Navigating Complicated Relationships with Mikayla Gaffin-Stone. To participate in the program, join the live studio audience in our chat room at InspiredChoicesNetwork.com. You can also send an email to Mickey@GaffinStone.com. Now back to the program.
Welcome back. I'm so glad you're still here, and I hope that this episode is thought-provoking. Whichever end of the spectrum you fall on, and whether you have neurodiversity yourself or you know people that do. And I'm pretty sure you're going to know people that do. There's an awful lot around. And sometimes I hear, this wasn't a thing in my day, or we didn't have kids like this when I was growing up. Yes, you did. They weren't recognized or acknowledged. They were probably bullied. And they certainly didn't have people advocating for them. And a lot of kids were just shut away, so you never actually got to see them. Can you imagine what a life that would be? You could have somebody who's incredibly intelligent, like Einstein, literally Einstein, who had Asperger's, and his social life was kind of in chaos, right? But he was brilliant. Now, if he had been locked away and not allowed into society because, you know, there's something wrong with him, then just think where the world would be now. We wouldn't have any of Einstein's theories that have made such a difference for things like space travel, for example. Like, we wouldn't be able to do a lot of the things that we can do. Wow. Just because somebody'd say, that guy's a little freaky and he doesn't wear socks, I'm going to lock him away. But that used to happen. Now, we're still trying to squish people. And I keep mentioning this because it's so important. So let's come up with a few solutions on how you can help someone with neurodiversity. And the first thing, and it's a huge thing, is listen. Really listen. Not listening to reply, because that's not really listening, that's just pacing. Not listening to correct, because I can't tell you how damaging that is when it's not been sought after. You know, if I'm giving you advice, if I walk up to you in the street and say, hey, I want to tell you how to raise your kid, or hey, I'm going to tell you how to do this thing, you probably wouldn't like it, right? You don't want somebody that you don't even know coming up and correcting you. And yet, how often do we do that to someone who's behaving differently, who looks different? How often do we talk over the person who doesn't look like us? You can even be sitting in a wheelchair and people will talk to the person who's standing. It's crazy. And I don't think it's something that people do intending harm, but harm happens. So first thing is listening to the person who's talking to you. And if it takes them a while to get all the words out and to express themselves, okay. You're not in a hurry. Let's just wait and hear what that person has to say. Because here's the thing. The more relaxed that person gets in your presence, and they're going to be more relaxed when you don't harass them to hurry up and speak, or you don't walk away when they haven't finished yet. You know, the more you are attentive to what that person's telling you, the more they'll relax, and then the easier they'll be able to speak to you. It makes sense. This is something you can apply in every interaction you have. And in fact, I wish you would. A lot of misunderstandings can be avoided if people stop talking and start listening. Don't just listen to the person so that you can reply. How many people do that? And you can see it, or at least I can see it. I can see it on their face when they're like, could you hurry up? I need to reply. You know, can you hurry up? I've got this thing in my mind. Sometimes people will even say, oh, just let me say this because I need to say it while I remember it. And they haven't paid the slightest bit of attention to what you're saying because chances are they wouldn't be interrupting you if they were listening. And human beings, a very basic need is to be seen and heard. We all need that. And I don't care what your diagnosis is, and I don't care if you're sitting, standing, doing headstands, cartwheels, or what. Everybody needs to be seen and heard. And when you deny somebody that, you are helping them to feel less than. And why would you do that, really? I don't think you would, not intentionally. So self-education, definitely. Learn all you can about the different diversities that you come across. And just be objective about it. It's not your problem. It's not your experience. It's theirs. So how can you help that person have a better interaction right now, a better space? You know, if you've got a colleague at work who has difficulty when there's noise going on, maybe they could have some headphones. That would be really helpful. Likewise for kids in class. Give them headphones so that they don't have to handle all of that. You're promoting the conditions for that person to be as successful as possible. Don't we want each other to be successful? I would hope so. So whenever you catch yourself trying to limit that other person by saying, no, we can't do that. No, you can't have that. Is there actually a reason for that? Or are you just saying it because, you know, it's easier? Really, staying open-minded. Curious, be willing to learn and grow in your understanding. These are things that you can do starting right this second to help people who have neurodiversity, whatever that looks like for them. And remember, behavior is communication. So whenever a person is showing you a behavior that maybe you don't like, wonder where is it coming from? Because they're really not doing it just to wind you up. Do you think they feel secure enough to do that? Typically not. They're doing it because they have no choice. They've got to communicate what's going on. So can you read that? Now, there's some notable people I want to mention before we end this podcast. Temple Grandin. Most people know her. She's got a PhD. She's a renowned author, speaker, and she's an advocate for autism awareness. She's known for her incredible work in animal science and her innovative, if I can say the word, designs for livestock handling. You know, she can do incredible things. Who would have expected that for her? Maybe nobody. But she has a unique way of thinking. Dan Aykroyd is an actor and a comedian. You've seen him in Ghostbusters and Saturday Night Live and various other places. He has Asperger's. He also has Tourette's syndrome and attention deficit disorder. So, you know, he's got a lot going on. But did he let it stop him? No. Did other people get in his way? Probably, but then he found people who would accept him as he is. He has a hyper focus on topics of interest, and that has really helped him in comedy and in creative pursuits. So, when you're looking at the people around you who are neurodiverse, what can they bring forward if you stop squashing them and if you help them to stand tall and feel good about who they are? I've already mentioned Richard Branson, Daryl Hannah. She's an actress and she's an environmental activist. She's been open about her diagnosis of autism for quite some time, and she's used it to, you know, have this platform for raising awareness. How many people do we need to do this? Could ordinary people, ordinary citizens, now do this as well? We don't have to listen to somebody who has autism talking about autism in order to understand that this is something we can accept. This person can come into our life and be a valued member of society, a valued person in your family. They have something to contribute. If you get nothing else from this podcast today, I would like you to get the idea that everybody, people with neurodiversity, belong. They don't need to fit in. They are not chameleons and they are not wallpaper. This is not something to expect. I'll see you next week. Thank you so much for listening. See you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Navigating Complicated Relationship Show. Michaela returns Wednesdays at 12 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Central, 10 a.m. Mountain, 9 a.m. Pacific on InspiredChoicesNetwork.com. Until then, remember every relationship is a journey, and with the right tools, you can create stronger, more fulfilling connections.